what it sounds like to me was that you did have ambition and motivation, but it was driven by anxiety and rooted in fear. But it doesn't, and it doesn't mean that you want to eliminate your motivation and your even ambition, but it shouldn't be driven by fear and anxiety. Because it's good to have a direction to head and to sort of like a compass to guide what choices you make in your life. But setting, it's important, I would say, not to think that setting goals is the problem. It's what's fueling, you know, the need. That's the issue.
Disasters and emergencies happen to good people like you every day. The frequency of these events are increasing at an astonishing rate. Now is the time to take responsibility for preparing and empowering yourself for the inevitable. Welcome to the Survive University Podcast, where we provide an education in preparation, giving you the tools to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. Now, let's get on with today's lesson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. So we are back with Mr. Gary Craftsell, my teacher, my yoga teacher. Been working with him for some time now. And you may have heard episode one that we did with him. And if you haven't, you have to go back. He talked about meditation and some of the ways that we can all really benefit from meditation, dispelling some of the myths about meditation, as well as yoga, and giving you more of the full understanding of what that is and how it relates to you to be able to survive. And so we're going it's so much information, and we had to have him back on here a second time so that we can talk about other ways that yoga and the practice of yoga can help people maintain and survive in this very crazy time that we're living in. We're looking at there's stats out there where like 40 million people are dealing with anxiety disorders in America, and PTSD affects 7.7 million, and panic disorders are like 6 million adults. Social anxiety disorders is like 15 million adults. And I mean, I personally can relate to PTSD, being in combat, being a combat veteran, having to deal with that on my own, and using the benefits and the practices of yoga to help me overcome those challenges. And that's why it's important that we have Gary on. Survival is a holistic thing. It is not just having a bunch of food stores. It's not just having a bunch of ammo. It's not, I mean, the lowest common denominator is us as the human being. And the lowest common denominator of that is our mind and spirit and that connection, that unification, that holistic approach. And so that's why having Gary on here as probably one of the most informed and knowledgeable people I know about this field is very important. So without further ado, Mr. Gary, how are you today?
I'm good, and I'm honored to be with you guys. Thank you very much. Love what you guys are up to. Survive University.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So my purpose for having you on here is to really, the probability of someone listening to this podcast right now that is dealing with high levels of stress in their life, that is dealing with overwhelming anxiety, that can't sleep at night, that can't, doesn't like to be around people or doesn't like to go outside. It's probably higher that there's more people listening to it that are dealing with that than it is less people who are dealing with that. So from your knowledge and your teachings, how can you help with something like that? How can yoga help a person with that?
So, I mean, first of all, if I'm with someone, then I don't need to speak in such a broad way than I will to try and touch somebody through a medium like a podcast, because then we can just start to work. But I think that speaking, you know, to an unknown audience, I think it's important to educate about some core reality. Like, the first thing I think is important to understand is that we as human beings are multidimensional. A moment ago you said it's not just about storing food and having ammo. So we're multidimensional human beings, and understanding what each dimension is and being able then to understand what to do to support each dimension is really critical for well-being and beyond just basic survival, for thriving and having well-being. So maybe what I can do is just speak for 2 or 3 minutes about this multidimensional perspective that has been passed on in yoga from its beginnings many thousands of years ago. And the first teachings of this appear even in an ancient text that comes from about 2000 BC. Maybe I'll name it, but then I'll just go on. That's the Taittiriya Upanishad. So all of us are born with a physical structure. In the West, we call it our anatomy. And our anatomy is our spine, which is our sacrum, lumbar, thoracic, cervical spine, our vertical spine, and then our shoulder girdle and arms and our pelvic girdle and legs. So we have this skeletal structure that the bones are moved by, the movement occurs at joints, which are held together by ligaments, and there's muscles that we use to move our bodies, and there's patterns that we follow in our movement. So a lot of us have structural problems. In fact, the statistics are really high. I don't have them like you quoted the anxiety statistics. But largely over 90 some percent of the population over about 30 years old suffer from low back pain, neck and shoulder tension, TMJ. So understanding how to manage your structure and create stability and structural integrity and range of motion so that you can move through your life without back pain, without neck tension that interferes with your ability to function in the world. And then we're not just a structure. Inside our structure is all these organs like liver and kidneys and spleen and stomach, you know, and lungs and heart. That's our physiology. And a lot of us are suffering from stress because of unhealthy diets, toxicity in the environment, eating the wrong foods at the wrong time, bad air, not pure water. And so we have a lot of physiological stress that leads to imbalances, immune challenges, disease, pain, sleep deprivation, and the big one, of course, being stress. So we can learn how to develop not only a conscious relationship with our anatomy so that we can fix back pain and neck tension, but we can develop a conscious relationship with our physiology. And that's via the breath's power to influence the autonomic nervous system, which is one of the control systems of all the other physiological systems. So learning how to manage sleeplessness, fatigue, stress, and pain, just to name a few, go a long way to helping us kind of transform our lives and move from basic survival to well-being and even thriving. And then we're not just an anatomy and a physiology, but we have this whole emotional life, which is a combination of like physiological responses that are coded genetically, like triggers. Like if you see danger, your heart starts beating faster, you know, that's sympathetic activation. So it's not only those coded triggers that are biological or physiological and coded into our genes, but it's then our interpretation of it. And so then we have all our emotions, our feelings like fear and anxiety. And depression and sadness and all of that. So we can learn to create a conscious relationship with our changing emotional reactivity that's physiological, and then the stories we're telling ourselves that we spin about why this is bad and that's bad and all the stress that we create with just our narrative that we are telling ourselves. So that's our emotions and then our self-concept. And our stories about ourselves that we're just telling about ourselves, and our stories about the people we live with, and our stories about our politicians, and our stories about the world around us. They're stories. And those stories lock us into this sort of suffering and fear and anxiety. And so learning how to balance our structure, balance our autonomic nervous system, and through that our physiology, balance our emotions, clarify our minds, stop telling stories to ourselves about who we are, and really starting to be able to see truly who we are. And then from that, being able to act more effectively and efficiently in the world, that's the science of yoga.
Okay. So Gary, let me ask you a question, because you spoke on a lot of different points there. And this comes from the perspective of the OG. How do you, or what telltale signs can someone use to recognize that they have stress or anxiety in their life without someone else telling them?
It's a beautiful question. So I'm going to, following what I just said, and please forgive me, I know that there's a lot of information here. You know, my failing is that I'm like a forklift dumping too much information on people. But that's part of what I have to do to share yoga to a community that has reduced it to such simple things. So I'll give you some examples. You know, if you're having chronic neck and shoulder tension, there's a good chance that stress is a major factor in it. If you're having chronic headaches, or you're having sleep issues, or you're having lack of energy in the day, in the midday, you know, like fatigue, there's a good chance that there's a stress factor involved. Or if you're having bloating and gas pain and digestive distress, there's a good chance that there's stress playing a role in it. If you feel anxious, if you feel angry, if you feel judgmental of others or intolerant of people that are different than you, that's a pretty good indication that there's some stress. If you're not happy, generous, and compassionate, but you feel self-centered and self-righteous, it's a good sign that there's stress going on in your life. If you're balanced, then you should feel better in your body, sleep better, have more energy, be happier, be less attached to things, be more generous, more tolerant, and more loving.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Because as I've aged, and I told Hakeem this when we first met, when I was younger, I mistook ambition and motivation for anxiety. Because I found myself in stress situations where I would switch a gear, mental gear, that would allow me to excel at certain things that I thought were unobtainable. And it gave me a weird kind of feeling inside, but that feeling propelled me to do some of the things that I normally wouldn't be able to do. And I always called it, when I was younger, I always said that it was, I was willing to do what anybody else wasn't willing to do to get that advantage professionally or career-wise. And it was always a weird feeling, but as I got older, it started to feel uncomfortable and destructive almost to say. And that's when I learned that it wasn't ambition, it wasn't motivation, it was anxieties that I was feeling, that I would switch into high gear and embrace those to overcome fear that I had to accomplish a goal. And now when I'm older, I'm not saying I'm old, but now I'm wiser, I feel it's like, wait, that hurts. And I don't have the physical prowess to say, hey, I'm going after this. It hurts. So I have to figure, I have to be smarter and not work harder. And what I had is not ambition, it's anxieties.
So, but what it sounds like to me was that you did have ambition and motivation, but it was driven by anxiety and rooted in fear. But it doesn't mean that you want to eliminate your motivation and your even ambition, but it shouldn't be driven by fear and anxiety. So what was painful for you was the being driven by fear and anxiety, not that you wanted to accomplish things. That's a good thing, but it shouldn't be driven by that kind of fear and anxiety.
Gotcha. Mm. Yeah.
Because it's good to have a direction to head and to sort of like a compass to guide what choices you make in your life. If you set high goals, then you just move progressively towards them. But if you feel like you have to or else, and then you feel driven, that's the problem. But setting, it's important, I would say, not to think that setting goals is the problem. It's what's fueling, you know, the need. That's the issue.
Yeah, I can attest to that, because I will say that in the last few years, you know, I've gone through some challenges. I mean, it was like a, not to say anything bad about country music, but it was a country song for a minute there. You know, like I was, you know, dog died and, you know, divorce happening and flood happening in the house and back problems. And I mean, it was all happening at one time. And, you know, I have achieved a lot in my life, but I was still feeling, you know, really empty and lacking joy in my life. And then finally, when I kind of realized this, you know, this isn't really about me. I need to look beyond me. I need to think about how I can be a part of the world, how I can bring more to the world. And then magically, the things that I wanted deeply inside that I was striving, me, I gotta do, just started happening. And then it almost was like I wasn't doing anything anymore.
You tapped into the magic.
Yes.
You know, can I share a teaching from yoga?
Yes, please.
You know, as I mentioned in that first conversation we had, there's been a reductionism of yoga to exercise. Yes. There's been a reductionism also of yoga to just the disciplines of the body, mind, related just to ourselves. But also, if you listen to the tradition, there's what they call tree karma. There's three aspects that really help us find fulfillment. One is our responsibility to ourselves, which is the disciplines of the body and the mind that we were talking about last time. But the second one is our responsibility to our community, our families, our community, our society, you know, including the four-leggeds, you know, not just humans, but our responsibility to the community of living beings that we find ourselves in. And the word that is used for that is dana, which means giving. It means generous disposition, altruistic and generous, not just self-serving, but being here in part to serve the whole, the greater whole. And then the third part is what's called yajna, and it's our responsibility to the bigger, the mystery, the divine, but also the whole, you know, the planet. That's bigger than just our local neighborhood family or ourselves. And so when we tap in and work to fulfill our responsibilities to ourselves, our community, our broader community, to the earth, and to the divine, that's when we tap into that magic. That's what the tradition says. And then things just start happening.
Knowledge bombs. We tend to drop them a lot around here, and we appreciate your feedback and support for the information, interviews, and perspectives shared. Become a Patreon supporter for Survive University and get additional exclusive content not shared during the podcast. Patreon subscribers also get information on other Survive University products and projects before they're released to the public. So visit patreon.com/Survive University and join us as we continue on this journey to get ready, be ready, and stay ready like never before.
But it's such a weird place, and I say weird, you know, just as a word, but not to degrade what we're trying to discuss. This idea of, you know, when you talk to people about that, and you know, I've met so many people, especially owning a 24-hour gym and a martial arts facility, that are trapped in these patterns. They're trapped in this language of I can't do, I won't do, I every time I try something happens that sets me back, and they're just locked in there, and you and it's hard to explain, maybe part of that is that you are mentally trapping yourself there. And maybe if you start using different language and you start thinking about your life differently, that it will become different. And then I can try to explain my experience, but it was my experience. So, and they can't live my experience. So it's hard for them to tap into that. What does yoga and what you know and what you teach have to say about that?
So first of all, and I mentioned this, I think, in the first session that we had together, that what you just described, that language of I can't and I don't want to, and it's just stories people are telling themselves about themselves. So you, as the teacher or the therapist or the supporter, just have to make sure that you don't buy into their stories, because they want you to buy into their stories and agree with them at how bad this and that is. That's what we want. We want to pull everybody into our story. So you as a helper, therapist, friend, advisor, teacher, guide, have to make sure that you're not pulled into their story, right? But then how to help them get out of it, and that really depends. It may be something very simple, like just go for a walk. Don't think, just go for a walk for 15 minutes, or maybe they're having problems with their mate. Just go for a walk for 15 minutes holding the hand of your mate. Or do this breathing exercise, or do these movements, or just only once a week, one day a week, don't drink coffee in the morning, or don't have that beer at night or that bourbon. So it really, if someone is willing to do something for themselves, if they have faith or belief that they can influence their own condition through their own action, that's the starting point. And you don't have to try to unpack the whole. Just find one doorway in, because everything's interrelated. So if you can find one simple thing that someone can do that makes them feel a little better, that gives them a little sense of peace, that's the start. And wherever, different people that I work with, there's different doors in. So somebody, it's related to their back. Somebody, it's related to their breath. Somebody, it's related to going for a walk or doing a discipline about what they're eating, you know, or making a different kind of friend, or listening to a music, or listening to a podcast. So I would say that it really depends on who you're working with. But once you begin to affect change, the whole system can begin to change. So the starting point is to help them recognize that they're not their stories, and that they can do something through their own effort that influences their own condition. Even if it's a teeny change, that will give them confidence in themselves and in this method. And that will just initiate a bigger process of transformation.
Wow. I love that you say that. And me coming from, you know, my military background, I've met a lot of soldiers that have been deployed. And we tend to think that is only our story, our experience, and we hold that in. And we don't want to share. And we feel like we can't talk to anyone because people don't understand. But again, that's all the story. So I think what's really, you know, beautiful about what you're saying is that, you know, if you are, and not you, Gary, but if I'm talking to the audience now, if you're somebody out there and you are, you know, having these conversations with yourself where you're saying to yourself, like, you know, I can't pay the bills and I have a horrible job and I have horrible friends or nobody loves me and stuff like that. You know, maybe do what Gary said, take a break and consider that might be a story that you're telling yourself, and you might be stronger than that story, or you can rise above that story.
Okay, Hakeem, he's airing my dirty business just because we have those conversations.
I'm not talking about anybody. Yeah, all right. No, stop.
Those are my private.
Well, you know, it also helps to have someone you trust that. You know, a good connection you could say a spiritual friend, someone who you can talk to, but also just go do something, go for a walk. You know what I mean? Just don't get caught up in yourself, or do something for others. You know what I mean? That's a big piece. If you feel like it, you can't do what you don't feel to do, but begin to move your energy so that you're not fixated on your own issues. But, you know, there's so much stress in our environment that it's also good to learn skills that you can use to manage your stress, to affect change in your own condition, and then to do something for others. And I think those two pieces can go a long way to help people.
What skills are there in yoga to do stuff like
Well, for managing stress, the number one skill, as we talked about in our last session, is begin to learn how to influence your condition through a conscious regulation of inhale and exhale. So the power of the breath is extraordinary to, you know, the respiratory system, which is one of the physiological systems that are controlled by the autonomic nervous system, is the only system that's immediately accessible to conscious control. So you can't speed up your heart or slow down your heart unless you've gone many years of deep inner practice. But you can stop your breath at any moment. So the breath is a doorway for linking your conscious mind to what are considered to be the automatic unconscious physiological processes. And stress is specifically a sympathetic parasympathetic, that's the autonomic nervous system, it's sympathetic parasympathetic dysregulation. And actually even, you know, one of my students was a senior psychiatric pharmacologist, and she told me that, I don't remember the exact percent, but like 90 plus percentage of the pharmaceuticals that are prescribed for managing symptoms of chronic disease are sympathetic parasympathetic activators. Breath is a sympathetic parasympathetic activator. It's not a substitute when you're prescribed with a doctor that you need pharmaceuticals, but it goes a long way to give you control and an ability to influence your own condition and to achieve stress management. So I'd say the doorway in terms of managing stress, of course, is breath. And then as you manage stress, it will increase your self-confidence because you did something and you feel better. So, but the next step is getting out the door. And that has to be, you have to find what we call yukti in yoga. It means you have to find the way, a strategy of helping someone who's in isolation slowly come back into the world. And that's, you have to work that out individually to help them move beyond their fear and isolation. But a starting point is they can start working with their breath. And if they work with their breath, they'll manage stress. They may sleep better and also have more energy in the day. And then again, if they feel that, you have to point it out to them. Like I've had guys that I've worked with who have back pain and I teach them something and their back's better, but they still think that they're a mess. And I said, but look, you did that and now your back's better. And they're like, oh, that's true. And it starts to help them feel empowered that they can actually change their condition through their own efforts. And that kind of way, that's what we're doing with yoga, is training people in simple things they can do to influence their own condition, and increases their self-confidence.
You brought up a good point. So can that be done despite their own mentality towards things? People tend to have draw lines, or actually they tend to draw lines in the sand, in that they set a goal, but because of the mentality that they have that something isn't going to happen, if it happens, then they set another line. They put another line and they say, well, yeah, that happened, but it was a fluke. But here's a bigger goal. Is it possible for these positive changes to take place despite of what some people would call stinking thinking or negative thinking?
Well, the answer is, of course, and I forgive me for this, is it depends. I mean, there are degrees of even clinical depression where the deep belief that things can change and anything good is just by coincidence needs a different level of psychiatric or mental health intervention. There is that. But the other thing is that if someone sets a goal that's too big for themselves, I'll give you an example. My son, now he's 28, but when he was a little boy, what we noticed is, and his mom was the one that really noticed it, let me give credit where credit is due. But what we noticed is if we gave him a plate of food that was a kind of a big plate of food, he wouldn't eat. So we had to give him a little bit, and then he would eat it and ask for more. So if people set too high goals for themselves, it tends to discourage them. So what we want to do is give them simple goals, not even their big goals, their main goals, but start by giving them simple goals that they can accomplish. And that will begin to increase their confidence in their own ability. If the negative thinking is at a psychiatric level, they may need some other kind of care. But otherwise, I've worked with lots of people who have self-limiting thoughts and who have big problems, and we didn't get to the big problems initially, but the reason that they stayed with me is because I helped them recognize small problems that they could change through their own efforts. And that took time, that gave them increased confidence in the method and increased confidence in me, but most importantly, increased confidence in themselves. And that through that progression, we would come to bigger issues, but over time.
Hey guys, there is a lot of information in this podcast episode, as well as all of our other episodes. We distilled down some of the greatest lessons from all of our episodes that we share with you. You'll find that information on our Patreon account, where we would like to invite you to come over for $4 a month. You can join our Patreon account. You can help support us, keep us doing this good work, and then also learn some valuable skills. If you're looking to get more education, get into some courses, join us at our SurviveUniversity.com website. Again, that's SurviveUniversity.com, where you can gain the knowledge that you need to really grow your survival expertise. That's deep, because on a more militaristic level, when I went to SEER school, the survival, escape, or evade, resist, and escape school, which basically you're in captivity, you're held as like a POW. So you end up going to this camp. And so I'm in this camp, and our training leading up to that is that once you get captured and you're in this kind of detainee camp, they will treat you, really bad. And if you think about the magnitude of your circumstances, they have me, I'm far away from friends and family, you will just go down into a hole of despair. So they always stress small victories, small victories. So I remember one day, and I can say this, it's not, classified or anything, but one day it's the middle of November or December, and I'm out there, and it's freezing, and we got these little paper pajamas on, and they're like making us do push-ups, and they're yelling at us. And the night before, because they had been spraying us with water hoses the whole time, and we were freezing out there, right? So the night before, a few of us got together, and we made a barrier, waiting in front of the bathroom area. And some of us started, poking holes, basically grinding holes into the water hose, so it wouldn't spray effectively. And so then they get up, and that next morning they're trying to spray us, and it's freezing out, and it's the water shooting all out of the hose, and it's getting on all of the guards, and they're really pissed off, and they can't figure out what's going on. So they take these little water bowls. These big burly guys walking around with these tiny little water bowls, like trying to spray them on people and throw them on people. And we had such a beautiful feeling in that moment. It's like we're in the most sucky environment ever. We got these tiny pajamas on. It's like 30 degrees outside, and this guy is splashing me with this little bowl of water. But it was so much joy in that moment. It took us so much beyond despair, where, so just taking those small victories and winning little by little, and just finding delight in the one thing that you can control and the one thing that you can do.
And you realize also that your joy and well-being isn't dependent upon those other things that you used to have when you were free.
Wow.
Found fulfillment just in that reality.
Wow.
That's a more advanced yoga teaching, of course, to be able to let go of everything and just know that you are what the yogis say, pure awareness. That's who we truly are. And it's not dependent on anything.
Well, we're coming close to the end of our time, so I don't want to take too much. This will be a lot shorter than our last one, but I want to leave some room for you to say some stuff, but I did want to talk briefly about my experience too. I went to the back doctor for my low back after the military, and it was increasingly getting more hard or more difficult to move about my day. And I got really scared, and every time I would go to the doctor, they just kept giving me more drugs. And so they gave me some medication, and that medication led to stomach problems. And then I went back and I said, oh, I'm having these stomach problems. And they say, oh, yeah, that's a common side effect. So here's this medication for your stomach. So that made it difficult for me to sleep, that medication for my stomach. So I went back, and I'm like, yeah, I'm having sleep issues as well. And they're like, oh, yep, that's a common problem with that stomach medication. So here's something. And that started making my migraines worse. So ultimately, that's when I started taking into my own hands to seek out a way to deal with this outside of being medicated. And that's where that was what led me to you, and then going to school for herbal medicine, And can you, there's so many layers in that story, but I'm sure that you, having dealt with people for so many years and learning through yoga, what can you speak about it in that, taking that?
Well, I mean, look, you know, the pharmaceuticals and surgery is a great gift of Western medicine, but it shouldn't be first option. It should be last resort. And self-care should be the foundation of all of our education. And I mean, ideally, when we're starting when we're young, how to manage and self-care. I mean, your story is a beautiful example of all that's bad in our current sort of public health care. I mean, there's a lot of good in public health care too. I want to be careful what I say, but what it points to is the interrelatedness of everything. So back pain, fixed stomach, not really fixed, but covered with the medicine, stomach problem as a result. Okay, stomach problem managed with the medicine, sleep issues. Sleep issues managed with the third medicine, headaches. And it's like you're getting what the ancients say is entangled in the, I'll adapt the Vedic thing, which is entangled in the world of name and form. You're entangled in Western pharmaceutical industry and thinking you need that in order to, and you just need progressively more in order to solve your problems, when the reality is keep looking further into that direction is just going to make things worse and further entangle you. So what you want to do and what you have done is find a way where you can begin, just like one thing influences the other. If you begin to do something for your back, it'll influence your stomach. Or if you do something to influence your stomach, it'll fix your back. And as your back gets fixed, you'll sleep better, which means you'll have less headaches. So the starting point is to recognize what you can do, to recognize that you can do something to influence your whole condition. And you don't have to start with everything all at once. You don't even have to start with the most serious thing. You just have to start with something that you can accomplish. And as you start to influence your condition, the whole thing will start to improve. And I mean, that's kind of the way I respond to this medicine thing. Everything got progressively worse versus everything can start getting progressively better. And then the things that you can't manage on your own, then you seek out the right kind of healthcare to get the support from your professional healthcare providers or your friends and family or community. Because not everything, it's not that we are isolated and can do everything on our own. We want to support each other on this journey, but take much more responsibility in managing our own condition.
Could you repeat the name of that concept that you just mentioned? The reason I want you to repeat it is because I think it's worthy of people recognizing that solitary concept, because it doesn't just lead to your dependency or your quest for pharmaceuticals. When you started talking about it, I was saying, "Oh, that's shock therapy. That's illegal drug addiction. All of those things, seeking out something that leads to something else, a gateway that leads to something else, that leads to something that doesn't fulfill you in the end." So I just wanted you to repeat that the word again, or the phrase.
But I think are you talking about when I said that? That we become entangled in the world of name and form. So the idea, the ancients used a phrase, a Sanskrit word, sorry about Sanskrit guys, called samsara, which means they translated the sea, like the ocean, the sea of cyclic existence, birth, you know, life, death, rebirth. That's what they're talking about. But that happens in every moment. So when you have a problem that is managed with a pharmaceutical, but then you need another pharmaceutical, it's like you're getting caught in this cyclic sea of, and what it's doing is entangling you. The tradition calls it entanglement in the world of name and form. By the way, that is nama rupa prapancha in Sanskrit. That's not important here. But you get entangled in that world of pharmaceuticals, and it's not really solving your problems, is getting you further entangled. And so we want to become freed from that entanglement. Stop looking outside for solutions. Well, let me rephrase that. Don't look first and foremost outside for solutions, because sometimes we need help. but look inside and find out what you can do to impact your own system rather than looking primarily outside of yourself for solutions. Because if you look outside of yourself, you can get caught in that system and get deeper into your entanglement. Whereas when you start to learn self-care, you can see there's so many things you can do. Oh, and this one I can't do, I need help. So you can be much more discerning and choose more appropriately which things to seek help for and which things you can manage on your own. That's what I was talking about. Is that what you were asking for the rip?
Yes, perfect. I mean, perfect summary, perfect. It's really important, and I didn't want that to skim over anybody, including myself. That's something worth thinking about, because you're empowering individuals to look at themselves and say, you already have the solution to the problems that you're encountering. There's no need for you to seek outside assistance until you find out that you can't assist yourself.
Correct. And in our work in yoga, we are not doing it to people. We're empowering people and educating them how to do it for themselves.
Good deal.
So, Gary, my last question is just really, if you can give me some guidance. So let's role play here. I wake up. I'm in a cold sweat. I have my heart's racing. I got this thing to do at work tomorrow. I got the kids that need to get to soccer. Oh man, I forgot to buy milk for the cereal in the morning. Or I'm at work. I'm not really sure what's going to happen today. And all of a sudden I start that sweating again. You know, my breath rhythm is all crazy. How does a person, is there a way that a person can pull back from that? Do you have any type of suggestions or ideas or practices that a person can do to calm them? I've heard this before, and this is why I say this. People will come to you. I've had it happen to me. Hey man, just calm down. Just breathe, man. I am breathing, so I don't understand what you're talking about. You know, just breathe, man. Just breathe. So telling a person just breathe, or sitting up in your bed at night covered in sweat, talking about, oh, I need to calm down. That's not necessarily enough. Are there things out there that people can do to help with that?
This is a sincere and serious question. So I want to be very clear about it. And my first answer is, and I apologize again, is it depends, because it's individual. But I can give you some general things. There's two things that we can do. One is what we can do when we're not in the cold sweat and panicking, and what we can do when we're in the cold sweat and panicking, and they're different things. And they're both important. So in the midst, like if you know that this is what's going on for you, that you're waking up with cold sweat, or you're having panic attack with breathing, then you need to find a time when you're not in that where you start to look through what your priorities are. You start to sort out what's important and what's not as important. And you sort of start to reorganize the structure of your day so you're not overly stressed. That's things you do when you're not freaking out. And then also you learn to begin to work your breath when you're not in the freak out. When you're in the freak out, like there are techniques, specialized techniques that I've given to people that are having full-blown panic attacks that bring them back into calm balance. The cold sweat, I apologize, it depends, but like the panic attack, there are specialized breathing techniques. I can't speak of them generally like this in a way that would make sense to anyone, but there are ways of helping people who are in an acute attack, and there are ways of helping people do things when they're not in an acute attack to reduce the likelihood that they'll be again in an acute attack. So that they're both important. With the cold sweat, it could be that, you know, the best thing to do is, it depends, because if they have to get the kids to school, that's why you have to sort out your priorities, then get up and get the kids to school and then go for a walk or go for a run. You know what I mean? If someone is anxious and they can't calm down, we don't want them to sit and meditate. We want them to go run. So they bring their So if their mind's agitated like this and their body's sedentary from having just woke up, you want to bring their physiological energy up to the level of their mind, and then bring the whole, you want to integrate mind and body and then bring it down. That's called pacing the energy where it is. So it really depends what's going on.
Say that one more time. That's called pacing the energy.
Called pacing.
Yeah, you've got to pace. So if somebody's really agitated and you want to work with them, you have to start like that and talk with them, and then slowly, and it's like mirror neurons, that you start calming down, they start calming down. Or it could be that go out and run around the block and then jog around the block, then walk around the block, then sit down, then breathe, then meditate. You know, you might think you're agitated, breathe and meditate. You can't. You're too agitated. So you have to pace the energy. And then it gets more complicated because they have their own unique family situations with responsibilities with kids or pets and work responsibilities. So I want to be careful not to generalize. But if you listen to the way I'm talking, with any individual, you want to work with them figuring out what their stressors are, what of them are real external stressors, and one of them are internal self-created stressors, and then begin to help them reorganize their life and teach them along the way skill sets that they can use to manage when there's an acute situation going on.
I have never heard that before. I've never heard, just like the scenario that you mentioned, I have always heard try to calm them down, not meet them where they are, and then, you know, gradually bring them down. It's always, well, if I talk calm to them, even though they're overreacting, you know, I can, they'll adopt my, you know, persona, my mentality. And, you know, it's like, I never thought of it, and it makes perfect sense.
I mean, it depends also. It depends how strong their dysfunction is, because if you're strong, if you as a therapist have a bigger, stronger energy, you might be able to pull them down. But in general, and we're talking about giving them tools they can use for themselves, they need to pace their energy. This is vinyasa. We do this in sequencing, Hakim. We need to pace their energy and then gradually move, like we would say brahmana talangana. That's technical in yoga, but Hakim understands it. So these are skills that you can learn. Yeah. And you can teach individuals over time how they can manage their own condition.
Yeah, they got a new thing called tactical breathing that I heard in the military, where it's like, I guess it's the 4-4-4 ratio, which is box breathing. 1-1-1-1, yeah. And this idea, like, you know, but I found that there have been military guys and girls that I've met that have had challenges with that, just because, like you said, they think that, you know, their therapist says, oh yeah, we've integrated this new thing called tactical breathing. So whenever you feel stressed out, we just want you to breathe, inhale 4 times, retain it for 4, exhale 4, and then suspend for a 4 count. And then everything will be fine. And they're like, well, when I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm thinking I'm back in Iraq, you know, this isn't, that doesn't mean trying
to do
that.
That's a simplification. Yeah. You know, I've always thought to myself, and I've had, as you know, other people like you who've come from special forces and who have worked with me, that, you know, they could use deeper education about this. And even in healthcare, there are some well-known doctors that are recommending some one ratio for every breathing ratio. But it's just, it's not sophisticated. It's just on the surface. So it's a little bit too simplified to say everybody do this. But it's the right idea to get people start to become conscious of their breath and work with their breath.
True, but the danger in that, Gary, is that a little bit of knowledge is very dangerous sometimes. Because you give a little bit of knowledge and they're like, hey, okay, well, if I know this, then I know everything. And then we go back to the conversation we had before where they feel overconfident, overly confident, not understanding everything they're supposed to know to master the technique.
Yep. So, Gary, if it was your time to leave the earth and there were 3 important messages that you would say that you would leave behind, what would those be?
Oh, my God. I've never been asked that question before. Let's see. Don't believe your own stories about yourself. Learn the power of the breath. And your first responsibility is to be happy. in a way that doesn't compromise anybody else's well-being. And if you're happy, you don't believe your own stories, and you work with your breath, know how to use your breath, you'll be able to find your way through this life. I never ever thought of that before, so I just had a spontaneous response.
It does sound like you had it planned. but we'll go past it. I have one more question for you. Just a side note question, and I appreciate your time. Based on the pursuit of, based on the pursuit of happiness, or having that be your ultimate goal, have you found out that a lot of people that study yoga don't tend not to deal with the benchmark issues in their lifespan? You don't have the midlife crisis or the end-life regrets because their focus is something totally different than what society promotes us as being?
I would say that those who have been initiated into and practiced the authentic yoga tradition definitely don't run into those issues. But probably the vast majority of people who are practicing yoga are doing it more superficially and will perhaps run into those same issues. So I wouldn't generalize about yoga, but I would say if they've been exposed to, initiated in, and practice authentic yoga, that is the full breadth of the tradition, absolutely.
Yes, sir. Well, Gary, thank you so much. We will have links in the show notes to all of the ways people can find you. I found someone special within you with the tradition and the knowledge that you know, and you've changed my life, and I can want nothing more for the world but to share you with as many people as possible. So they can find that information in the show notes and on our on the podcast and everything. And other than that, thank you so much for your time. I know we went a little over today, and I'm so grateful for your patience and all the beautiful things that you bring to the world.
It's truly an honor to have this opportunity to share these things with you and your community. And I want to thank you both. And I wish all of you guys well, and hope to see you along the way as we move from birth to death. You know, they say, in South Italy, they say, if I never see you again, may you have a nice death, which means that may your life be full, and may you reach the end with joy and gratitude.
So having Gary on the show today was absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, I've had hours and hours and hours with this guy, mm-hmm. And in training. And every single time I talk to him, I'm like feeling like I'm talking to him for the first time. He's not only just giving me nuggets, he is showing me how to like smelt those nuggets down and turn them into jewelry, and like, you know, keep changing them so I can gather, you know, value out of it. And I mean, that's really what you want in a teacher, especially in something that you're training lifelong. What did you think? What was your take?
It gives you a new perspective on things. The conversation was refreshing for me, because it took me out of my normal train of thought and how to approach situations and obstacles that happen in my life. It's refreshing, and it dispelled a lot of myths about what I had about yoga. Not saying that it was anything negative or you know, a bad way of thinking about it. It was just, I didn't know. You don't know what you don't know. And now that I've gotten older and wiser, and recognizing that that my way is not always the best way, or even the fast way, or the way the American way isn't always the best way. And there's, you know, you can pull back from history to get a better perspective on things. It was refreshing. It was an entry into understanding that there is a science, so to speak, if you can call yoga a science, that introduces you to a process of thinking that will allow you to better your situation. It's not a magic pill, you know, pun intended. There's not a magic potion or something that you can do you know, that you can buy it, you know, in a local drugstore, local big box store to fix your situation. All the questions and all the answers that you need are within yourself. And I've, you know, you always hear that
mm-hmm.
coming up, but actually learning that, no, that there's some truth to that, makes me very, makes me feel good and makes me curious to learn more.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, the answers are within yourself. I think that's a really, that takes me back to my youth and growing up, and meeting and talking to, you know, 5 percenters and, mm-hmm. you know, there's, and for the audience members, maybe not everybody knows what that is, but, you know, there's a group of individuals that, would, you know, hang out on the streets. And, you know, it wasn't that they lived on the streets. It was just, they would hang out, you know, when I was going to school or when I was outside, and they were these, people who knew a lot about a lot, mm-hmm. and they would speak about different problems and issues in the world. And then they would relate that to different aspects of metaphysics or mathematics or spirituality. And, you know, this one specific group was called the 5 percenters, and there's a whole, you know, history and story, but I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, I remember meeting this one cat, and he was talking to me as a, you know, a young kid, and he was like, yo, you know, like, there is this, you know, you're made in God's image. You know, you are God. You are God. And I remember saying to myself, like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I'm God. You know, like, what? You know, my family has a church, and, you know, I said, spent some time in the church. And so I'm like, I'm God. Come on, man. Like, no. And, you know, but as I got older and I get older and I start recognizing all of the different aspects of who we are and all of the different levels of multidimensional layers of us as human beings, I start recognizing, like, man, you know, we have the power to create, we have the power to destroy, we have the power to control our emotions in some ways through our language and actions. We can control other people. And so maybe he wasn't so far off the mark. Maybe we're not God as in, like, you know, the great G-O-D, but maybe in the idea of a concept of what God can do, you know, that's what he meant. Like, hey, you can also destroy and create. You can also, you know, influence other people and things of that nature. And so when I talk to people like Gary and I train with people like Gary, I'm always reminded of how deep that ability really goes, mm-hmm. how non-surface it can be. You know, and that's is amazing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It makes you understand that our dependency on things that we can't necessarily control, so to speak. I guess when I say that, I mean that we have relinquished the power that we have within to a level where we're dependent on everything else. We're dependent on things that are exterior to us. We went from a point where depending on ourselves to depending on other things to a codependency to now depending on things that are totally outside of ourselves for everything. And I think there may be a point to both, like you said, the 5 percenters, to what Gary was saying, to us just realizing that there doesn't need to be such a dependency on things that are outside of us, which will be contrary to what you find in a capitalist society, a commercial society, because they want you to desire the things that are on the outside of you, but
consume
exactly. But once you recognize that that it's not necessary, you have a more complete self. There's no need for you to accent your body with a certain type of shoe. I'll say green bottom shoes, or, you know, certain sports figure shoes, or a certain kind of garb, because you recognize, one, those things are material. They're not really that important. But on top of that, the time and attention that you dedicate to obtaining that takes you away from your true purpose and what you need to accomplish. And I know we're going really metaphysical. It feels like I should have like a diggable planet's beat underneath this, but
and a little cloud that you're floating on,
and I'm snapping my fingers, you know, groovy baby. But it really wakes you up. And I guess if I could say I had any regrets, the biggest thing would be like, wow, why didn't this light bulb go off a long time ago? It was never introduced to me, first of all, but you once you get it, you wish that you got it earlier. You feel like you all the time that you had before was wasted, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you know, it's interesting. You know, these things come to us in our own time, or in the time that I guess is meant for our lives, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe they surface a lot. They surface a lot of different times. You know, there were certain things that I was told about or wasn't told about in my life by even my own mother that, you know, I didn't hear her at that time. You know, I didn't hear her at the time that she was saying those things. You know, I remember, for instance, you know, I end up getting $3,000 and I'm like 18 years old. And she was like, hey, you should save that. You should put it in the bank and don't touch it. You know, now as a person who's been in financing and things of that nature, I know that maybe I wanted to, there was a place to put it. I didn't just want to put it in a savings account, you know, and not touch it.
Yeah.
So there were better places to do, but you know, I end up spending it on like a speaker system and like getting my car repainted, and the car ended up breaking down like a few months later and blowing a head gasket mm-hmm. of no less. So it wasn't even worth getting it fixed, you know? And I ended up having it, you know, sell it for like pennies. And, you know, I was like, wow, you know, but now I know a lot about finance and I'm like, man, I should have really saved that money. If I had just put that $3,000 in a mutual fund or something like that, but way back when, if I just had somebody to tell me, and my mom was on partially the right track. If I had listened, then, you know, maybe I would still have that $3,000 to use for something else, but I used it on some wasted, you know, stuff, but I had to go through that. And so sometimes we have to go through these things. One of the questions that I have for you, though, as a final question, as we're ending out this session, is you've been getting into the meditation thing. You bought a book on it recently and you've been reading about it. And and it just so happens that today's episode, we were talking to Gary about meditation. So and you got that not knowing that we were going to talk to Gary about meditation. You just did it, you know, for your own self. So
true.
You know, going through that book and, you know, I don't know if you read it all already, but going through that book and learning some of that stuff and then talking to Gary, a master, a guy who's been meditating and practicing these methods for 47 years or 46 years. Mm-hmm. And he's learned a tradition that's been passed down from generation to generation for 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. My gosh. Like, what's your take?
It feels almost like fate, in the sense that I've only recently let myself be open to having the conversation about this type of stuff. Not that I was resistant before, but it's just, it was a time in my life where I felt that I needed it. You know, everything else didn't really make that much sense, or I was skeptical about everything else. I'm skeptical about, you know, Western medicine. I mean, you know, you take medication and it's a blessing to have it, but at the same time, you always feel like there may be another way. Skeptical about, like we said before, consumerism, you know, it has to be another way. And everything was kind of getting to a point where it was pushing me to look inside myself. The self, the things that I was seeking and the opportunities, that everything that I wanted to have was an external experience. And realizing that, okay, once you accomplish this, if you don't have that level of fulfillment, then looking somewhere else may be not the issue. You may need to look in yourself. So it was perfect timing when I was open to, plus the conversations we've had made me think. I know you meditate on a regular basis, and you have a demeanor that's calm. I think it has partly to do with the fact that you're a ninja, you know. But at the same time, there's a certain order and things that you approach things with. And I've done that in the professional realm, done it in the personal realm, but there was always something, there was always a little thing that was missing. So in the quest to always try to better myself, I wanted to explore this as an option, and I found this to make a lot of sense. But personally, it just took me getting to the point where I was fed up with being fed up. So you know, you try all these different things and you see you get to the point where you try fads and you watch fads come and you're like, that's not gonna work because I've seen that before. It's just a new wolf in sheep's clothing. And you get to a point where it's like, okay, what's the real? And that's what forced me to start looking in the past and trying to find out exactly what has worked before I was here. which is something that we don't really do in the West a lot. We tend to think, okay, what happens to us at this age, everything that happened before was old.
Yeah.
Does it work or does it not work? Doesn't matter. It's old because everything now is new and improved. And you get to a point where you recognize, hey, the people who experienced things before me may know something that may benefit me. And looking at yoga, looking at meditation, and looking, you know, following the people, looking at the people that I know that do it on a regular basis, they had something that I wanted, you know. And it's not materialistic, it was just peace or organization or structure. So reading the book, and I don't know the title of the book off the top of my head, because we were getting ready to go in this, and my memory shot, to be perfectly honest with you. But reading the book and practicing the exercises, the breathing exercises, and the perspective that it provides is a beautiful thing, because it makes me trust myself, if that makes sense. It makes you listen to what you're saying internally and trust yourself. Don't listen to what your ego is saying. Don't listen to what the TV is saying. Don't listen to what somebody else is saying about you, but listen to what your body and your mind and your spirit is telling you about you. And I know it sounds like some beatnik stuff, but it's true. When you get tired of listening to all these exterior voices, taking the time to really understand who you are is priceless, man. I mean, who you and your body, your spirit, your mind are telling you, this is, I mean, you're running around in circles, but this is who you truly are. It helps you align in purpose. And I know, because I'm older now, that it's not something that, it's not a microwave meal. You know, it's a Sunday sit down meal that's going to take some time to ingest, digest, and manifest itself in the proper way. And which is new for me. I'm used to quick, fast, make it happen. Do what you got to do. Get that New York hustle. Make, you know, do what you got to do to make it happen. Well, I'm not just saying New York and LA, wherever you're from. It's that hustle that you aspire to when you're younger. But that wisdom is key, man. And if you can incorporate both of those in your repertoire, you're a bad mother. You're a bad mother.
Shut your mouth. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it. That's all I got to say. I could add some more, but, you know, we've really dived into this. And I think it hopefully changed some people's lives and gave them some guidance on how to better survive and then work towards thriving in their own life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, please support us, guys, on our Patreon account. It is patreon.com/surviveuniversity. You can visit us there and check us out. Also, please share this, leave a review, and then share it with friends and get them to understand. That's how we actually grow as a community and as a person, is that we share valuable stuff with people that are going to change their lives in a positive way. It's enough sharing of negative stuff out there that are dragging people down. Let's lift each other up and let's grow each other so that we can survive together as a people. And so, without anything else, thanks a lot, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you on the next podcast.
Talk to you later.